Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, old sports, and welcome to another episode of the Hello, Old Sports podcast on the Sports History Network. It is time for episode 2 in our ongoing series of the best all-time starting nines for each major league franchise. We already did the National League Central, and we are on to the American League West. Before we get started, I would just like to remind you all to please follow us on iTunes or whatever your podcast app of choice is. You can please give us a rating and a review if you like what you hear. If you have any suggestions, please feel free to contact the show at HelloOldSports@gmail.com. And you can also follow us on Facebook at HelloOldSportsPodcast. Andrew, how are you today?
I am doing tremendously, Dan. I am doing just almost nearly exactly as well as I was doing the last time we did one of these episodes. I'm probably on average about an hour more tired than I was when we did the last, because we're definitely not recording them back to back or anything. But we had a lot of. Go ahead. Sorry.
We finally have two episodes that we can record back to back and not have it turn into an all nighter. So I always tell the story about how when we recorded for the first time, we thought we might be able to record two episodes back to back. And what we thought we were going to be able to do in a couple hours ended up being our first three episodes that I think clocked in at a total of like 7 hours. So the ability to occasionally do a slightly shorter episode or two and maybe record them in back to back in the same night, it's kind of nice once in a while.
Plus, I get to refer to tonight as a double event this time.
Is that a wrestling term?
The reference to what Jack the Ripper wrote in a letter, or wasn't the real Jack the Ripper, but it was one of the Jack the Ripper letters. He said double event this time, meaning he killed two people that night.
Well, that sounds awful, but So the National League Central had a lot there. There were four teams that went all the way back to the 1880s, at least. The American League West, maybe not so much. There is a lot of not great players to choose from in this list of five players. Although theoretically, we could have had Nolan Ryan as the starting pitcher for three different teams. So I guess that's something to hang your hat on. So we were going to be talking about the AL West here, the Athletics, the Mariners, the Angels, the Astros, and the Texas Rangers. So do you have anything to add before we get started?
Yeah, so I made light of it before, but we recorded this in the NL Central episode in the same night, which means I studied for them all in the same night. And for once, I did it right. I did this first. I said, I'm going to do the AL West first because it's going to be a lot of what you just described. I don't use that sort of language. But it'll be a lot easier because like doing the Angels and the Rangers, it was like a delight when then I got to do the Reds. And I was like, oh, I have 120 years of history to go through instead of like, this guy was okay for 3 years. So no, let's just clarify a couple of things here. And it's easy for most of them. But the A's includes their time in Philadelphia and theoretically their time in Kansas City, although not really that much. The Rangers includes the 1960s version of the Washington Senators, not the historical Walter Johnson Senators. That was the Twins franchise. The original Senators moved to Minnesota in 1961. The new Senators came in the next year. Or wait, they came in that
same
was
year.
60. Yeah. They came in 61. Yeah, you know, I knew they didn't miss a year. I was getting the Twins' first year was 61. Yeah. So this is the Senators that existed from 61 to what, 70 before they moved to Texas?
It was like 72, I think they moved to Texas. Okay. Because Ted Williams was the manager of the Senators their last few years, and then the manager of the Rangers in Texas their first year or two, and that was in the early 70s. These are the Senators teams whose uniforms are kind of similar to the Nationals of today. They had the red hat and helmet with the curly W, not the Senators of Walter Johnson with the bluer uniforms with the block W. So that's the difference there.
Just to finish up, the Mariners have obviously always been the Mariners. We get the Astros, who were very briefly the Colt 45s. We'll take both the AL and NL versions of the Astros. And then the Angels will include the Los Angeles Angels, the California Angels, the Anaheim Angels, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, and now just back to the Los Angeles Angels. Did I get all that?
When did they go back to the Los Angeles Angels?
I think they dropped the of Anaheim a long time ago, like at least 5 to 6 years.
You know, and it's funny, too, because when I was at Dodger Stadium, and my Dodger Stadium story is one that I may have told here before, which was not a good one. But in the two innings that we were actually at the game, I saw people walking around with shirts that said the Los Angeles Dodgers of Los Angeles. So
when they do their Subway Series or whatever, not obviously not a Subway Series there, but when they do their like area thing, you'll see a lot of those at Dodger games that say that. I mean, we can also talk about the fact that just the Los Angeles Angels literally means the Angels and Angels. But yes, so those are the teams we're talking about.
Well, we could also talk about the fact that the team is known as what they were known as when they first started in 1961. But for 50 years in between, they were known as three other different things before they're just back to the Los Angeles Angels. So it's like the Oakland Raiders thing on steroids. But instead of it being 10 years in a different city, it's 50 years and no city move whatsoever.
So last time when we did it, we had four teams with a lot of history to choose from and one team with not much history that we kind of dropped in there. This time it's almost the opposite. I mean, there's some history to some of these teams. It's all just mostly recent in this context. So you went first last time. So I guess I'll go first this time.
Go for it.
Let's start with the Texas Rangers, formerly the Washington Senators, but not the historical Washington Senators. And here's what I have. Catcher, Ivan Pudge Rodriguez. First baseman, Rafael Palmeiro. Second baseman, Ian Kinsler. Shortstop, Alex Rodriguez. Third baseman, Adrian Beltre. Outfields of Juan Gonzalez, Josh Hamilton, Frank Howard. And then pitcher, I never got to a definitive answer, and I just wrote you, Darvish, because I was tired of thinking about it.
So I am with you 8 for 8 on the position players. This actually isn't a bad lineup. You feel like Pudge is a Hall of Famer. Beltre is a Hall of Famer. Now, Beltre is not somebody who played his entire career with the Rangers. He was only there for 8 years, but he's a guy with 3,000 hits. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Juan Gonzalez had some really good years with the Rangers in the 90s. Did Juan Gonzalez ever win an MVP with the Rangers? I think he might have.
I can pull that up. I believe you're right. Was it maybe 97?
Let's take a look at that here. Two AL MVP seasons, 96 and 98.
The two I gave the most thought to was, for a minute, I'm like, A-Rod was there 3 years. Can you really give it to A-Rod? The short answer is yes, especially in the absence of anybody else who's a suitable replacement. Did he win two MVPs two of the 3 years he was there?
Just the one. He won it in 03, his last year there, as the first player in 15 or 16 years who'd won MVP on a last place team, and then he immediately demanded to be traded. And that was, I mean,
he was the runner up the year, but he was the runner up the year before that in 02. So he was literally in Texas for 3 years. He was sixth in MVP, second in MVP, first in MVP, gold glove all 3 years, silver slugger all 3 years. His, and again, I'll just do the power numbers. His power numbers those 3 years: 52, 135, 57, 142, 47-118. So, yes, you can give it to a guy who's been there for 3 years. And then second baseman Ian Kinsler, I believe Michael Young was the other one you saw debated a lot there. Was that correct?
He actually played all three infield positions, second, third, and short. Okay. He actually played more games at shortstop, and I kind of tried to get there with Michael Young at shortstop over A-Rod. Interesting fact, Michael Young played 13 years with the Rangers. A-Rod played three. So Michael Young literally played a decade more with the Rangers. Both had a WAR of 25.5 during their time with the Rangers.
And that's a counting number. That's not an average number.
Exactly. So you figure A-Rod did just as much for the team in 3 years as Michael Young did in 13. Michael Young was a 7-time All-Star with the Rangers. Tacoma Gold Glove at shortstop in 2008. So not a bad player, but yeah, I was there with Kinsler and with A-Rod. Josh Hamilton, who had some personal issues, obviously was only a Ranger for 6 years, won an MVP award in 2010, which was one of the 2 years that the Rangers made it to the World Series. They lost in 2010 to the Giants, I believe, in six games. I'd have to go back and check that. Had some really good years, and then I think his personal issues kind of caught up to him a little bit. So you got a bunch of outfielders who, you know, three MVPs among the two of the three outfielders in Hamilton and Gonzalez. Frank Howard, who was this huge, imposing player on the Washington Senators of the 60s, and was something like 6'9" and still kind of a hero to old school DC baseball fans. He's the one Washington Senator that makes it onto the list. 36 home runs in 1967, leads the league with 44 and 68, 48 and 69, and then it leads the league again in 70 with 44 home runs, as well as 126 RBIs. Really, really good player, power hitter. Started his career with the Dodgers, where he won a World Series with them, with the Koufax Drysdale team. 246 home runs, so an average of over 30 a year in eight seasons with the Senators. And I don't know if he was there till 72. So I think that might have been, he either plays 1 year or 0 years with them in Texas. He's mostly just a Senator. So I think we're basically in agreement. This team is not as bad as you might think it is for the only, I think they're the rank. We have the only two teams that have not made it to a World Series. No, the Rangers have made it to the World Series.
Rangers made it to two.
They've now since made it to two. And I just said that a minute ago, if I was paying attention to myself. You said you had Yu Darvish with the Rangers. He only pitched 5 years for them. I went with Kenny Rogers, who actually did three different stints with the team, 89 to 95, 2000 to 2002, and 04 to 05, 133 wins with the Rangers, pitched a perfect game for them in 94, four Gold Glove awards. So we're not really picking from the cream of the crop here when we're talking about the best starting pitcher in Rangers history, but Kenny Rogers can get there for me.
Yeah, it was, to me, it was Rogers was sort of the default, and, you know, maybe it was sort of biased against him for his time with the Yankees, which was not exactly stellar, and that's being kind. So I was looking at him, and then I looked at, who else did I look at real quick? Kevin Brown, but Kevin Brown wasn't as good as I like this Baseball Egg website that I looked at. They had him as their ace, as his ace. You know, then there's Nolan Ryan, but that was the tail end of Nolan Ryan's career. I mean, he, you know, I think he threw at least one more no hitter with them. But I just looked at a few different guys, and I ended up with Darvish. I'm fine with Kenny Rogers. I think you're probably correct that that's the way to go. So I went with him. Frank Howard, I looked it up, by the way, he played part of the 72 season with the Rangers and then left. I don't know if he was, I'm assuming he was traded and went to Detroit after that. So that Senators team, actually, I remember when you had done like research for a guy who did a podcast on the an episode of the night team about the a podcast episode about the 1969 Senators, which was kind of like a surprisingly pretty good team that some people in DC kind of recall fondly. And that just sort of sprung to my mind when I was looking at this and thinking about him specifically.
Justin McGuire did his great Baseball by the Book podcast, and he still does it periodically, but he sort of.
So he does it about like magazines now.
He does it on occasion now, like a few times a year. For a while, he was basically every week or two. He's done like 300 episodes at this point. And I was sort of helping him out as one of a few guys who would kind of, you know, go through the books, read the books, come up with some potential questions for him to ask. And I think I did like 8 or 9 of them for him, all told. And it was funny because I think I wrapped up with that sort of just as we were coincidentally starting with this podcast. I think he stopped doing his thing in like early, like springish of 2021 was when he stopped doing regular episodes. But one of the first ones I did, and I forget the author's name, was a book called A Whole New Ball Game, which is about that 69 Senators team. Incidentally, 1969 in Washington DC sports is one of those interesting years. Maybe that could be something we did as a podcast one day, because you got that Senators team that came out of nowhere to win almost 90 games. You got the Bullets, although they were still in Baltimore at the time, with Wes Unseld winning Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same year. If you want to stick in Baltimore, you got the Orioles, great team, losing to the Mets. And then in D.C. with the Redskins, you got Lombardi coming to coach the Redskins for the 1 year that he was there before he passed away. So lots of interesting stuff in Baltimore, D.C. sports in that 1969 timeframe. But anyway,
was that book written by Stephen J. Walker? Does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds right. That definitely sounds right. So, yeah, Stephen J. Walker, whole new ball game.
Before we move on, I just remember looking research this whole thing. I didn't realize when the Senators, so the original Senators moved to Minnesota, and sort of the politicians in D.C. didn't want to, they wanted to sort of wield their influence to get the Senators back, right away. I didn't realize that part of the deal was that you couldn't play a game with any less than 3 Senators in the lineup, like U.S. Senators. And that's one of the reasons they were so bad, was that so many of those Senators were out of shape and old and, and that kind of thing.
None of that is even remotely correct.
Listen, I have to, I have to ratchet up the nonsense a little in this episode. I played it relatively straight for the NL Central one. I mean, we're going to start talking about some guys in a minute here, so I have to have a little bit of fun here. So yes, so we'll agree or disagree.
So our Texas Rangers lineup, Texas Rangers / Washington Senators, Pudge Rodriguez, Palmeiro, Ian Kinsler, Adrian Beltre, A-Rod at short, and then Juan Gonzalez, Josh Hamilton, Frank Howard in the outfield, and Kenny Rogers as the pitcher. And is it my turn?
Yes, your turn between the A's, the Mariners, the Astros, and the Angels.
All right. I don't want to do the A's just yet.
Yeah.
Let's do the Mariners, because this one I think was almost surprisingly okay also. So I had Dan Wilson as my catcher, John Olerud at first, Robinson Cano at second base. I had Edgar Martinez at third, because even though he was a DH almost in his entire career, his main position when he did play the field was third. So you wanted to get him in and you had to put him somewhere. Shortstop, I had A-Rod. And then my outfield was Griffey, Ichiro, Jay Buhner, and my starting pitcher was Randy Johnson.
So we are remarkably similar with one difference. So I did have Dan Wilson at catcher. At second, I had Cano over Brett Boone. Cano, obviously the money he got in Seattle, and he got caught a couple of times with steroid or performance-enhancing drug-related things. But he still had some really good years up there, certainly better than Brett Boone. Now, and also, I mean, if we're going to wave that around, there was a year out of nowhere where Brett Boone hit like 50 home runs. So if we're going to paint with that performance enhancing brush, we have to at least mention that.
Fair point.
I did the exact same thing with Edgar Martinez, because I'm looking and I'm going, and I guess this is going to be a thing we're going to have to talk about at one point with the AL East too. I'm looking and I'm going, this guy's a Hall of Famer. Can I really not put him in this lineup because he was a DH? So it's a bit of a fib because he barely played third base. But if you were going to call him anything, you would call him a third baseman. But I feel validated by the fact that we both did that. Like, if you had said to me, oh, you really can't count him as a third baseman, I'd be like, all right, fine. But we both agree on that. Outfield, I did the same thing. Ichiro, Griffey, Buehner. Really wasn't as long-lasting with Buehner as I thought it was, but still give him the nod. And pitcher, Randy Johnson. I mean, Felix Hernandez had some really, really good years, but, you know, Randy Johnson's that were just that much more dominant, even if he had maybe one or two less of them before he moved to Arizona than Felix Hernandez did. I went with Alvin Davis at first base over John Olerud. I thought about Olerud, so it's not like, oh, I, you know, we're way off on that. I just figured Olerud maybe was not there quite as long. Alvin Davis was there 8 years. Rightly or wrongly, I kind of wanted to put somebody who was on the team before 1995 in there, because the rest of it otherwise is a very modern team. Let me pull up Alvin Davis's stats just to see. And I mean, again, if you really feel strongly about putting Olerud in there, we can certainly do that. But let me see if I can get Alvin Davis's stats here.
While you're doing that, just real quick on the pitchers. I was back and forth between Felix Hernandez and Randy Johnson too. Both won one Cy Young Award when they were with the Mariners. Now Randy Johnson then went on to win four in a row when he was in Arizona, and maybe that factor.
He'll be on the Arizona team, not for any spoilers, but when we get there, he'll be on the Arizona team.
Yeah, I think four Cy Young Awards in a winner in a row gets you there. So I was sort of the same way, and that I thought maybe there was a way, maybe Felix Hernandez deserved it, but Randy Johnson was just so iconic. And the other thing too is that the Mariners, I don't know, I'm sure they made the playoffs at some point during the Felix Hernandez years, but Randy Johnson was. They didn't make it at all.
The Mariners haven't made the playoffs in 2001 until this year.
You're right.
They made it this year. Yeah.
So even to prove my point a little more, I feel like that kind of drives home just what a big deal and some of the big moments that Johnson had 95, 97 for those Mariner teams. So I was comfortable with Johnson. I also look closely at the Alvin Davis versus John Olerud thing, but why don't you go ahead first?
So Davis, if you look, he's what, ninth overall in WAR for the for position players. So again, not super high, but higher. You know, he appears, whereas John Olerud doesn't. Two All-Stars. He did win a Rookie of the Year in his rookie year, which would have been 84. You know, if you want to maybe say the knock on him, but that was obviously the highlight of his time. And then he made just one more. Actually, never made an All-Star team after his rookie year. Finished 23rd in the MVP voting in 89, but you know, overall 9 years there, he was a 280 hitter, over 100 RBIs twice, just shy a couple of times, 95 in 1989. So again, not great, but the look, you know, he was there quite a while. He was probably the best player on that sort of era of very bad Mariner teams. So I gave it to him, but you know, if Olerud's defense and sort of being a part of those really good teams, if that puts it over the top for you, I certainly won't argue with it.
You know, I think I'm going to defer to you on Davis. The batting average differences are actually not that different, especially when you think of Olerud as such a great average hitter. Davis in his 8 years hit 281. Olerud only hit 285. Davis has twice as many home runs, more than twice as many, 160 versus 72. Did you mention, did Davis ever win? Let me see. Defensive wise, Olerud.
I'm sure Olerud was much better.
Olerud won 3 gold gloves. Let me see how many Davis won.
I didn't see any, especially, you know, the era he played in. I didn't see any.
Never a gold glove. But you know what? I think they're close enough. And Olerud was past his prime. His best years were Toronto and New York. So he was the first baseman on that great 2001 Mariner team that won 116 games. But I can give you Davis. It is funny, like you said, that we came really, really close to not having a single guy from before that 95 team that, you know, sort of saved baseball in Seattle. So we're going to have Dan Wilson, Alvin Davis, Robinson Cano, Edgar Martinez, Alex Rodriguez, Ken Griffey Jr., Ichiro Suzuki, Jay Buehner, and Randy Johnson. So you got two guys who are already in the Hall of Fame, and or three guys, Randy Johnson, Griffey, and Edgar Martinez, a fourth who's going to be there in Ichiro, and then obviously A-Rod would be in if he hadn't had all of his extracurricular issues. So, not a terrible team, the Seattle Mariners. And I think that
they were so good in the 90s, and then they had Ichiro, and I guess really if you look, most of this team is really from that one era, from the 90s era, depending on where you landed. You know, some other people might have landed with Felix Hernandez instead of Randy Johnson, but very concentrated in that sort of 95 to 01 era for the most part.
And I think it's your turn, and you should go next.
It is. So I'm trying to figure out the best way. Let's go with the Astros, because I think they're pretty interesting, especially given their recent history. And then there might be sort of a can we or can we not do a certain thing here. So for the Astros, I went with Brad Ausmus at catcher, Bagwell at first. I went with Biggio at second, Carlos Correa at short, Alex Bregman at third. My outfield was Jose Cruz, Cesar Cedeno, and Lance Berkman, and then Justin Verlander is the pitcher.
Yeah, I had to go back and relook at Verlander because you just don't think of him as an Astro. But then when you figure the guys look at won two Cy Young awards, I almost didn't think of it until
and
I
two like, championships.
Oh. Yeah, I was like, shouldn't this be Verlander given what he's done for this team and led them to the World Series, or not to the World Series, but led them to world titles for the first time ever? He is clearing away first ballot Hall of Famer. He probably goes into the Hall of Fame as an Astro when you figure this is what he's where he's dominated, even though he missed basically the last two seasons prior to this one. But the guy is very likely the best pitcher of our generation. So I think that he definitely gets the starting nod. He even though he missed basically all of 20 and completely all of 21, he's still his last two seasons that he's actually pitched, he's won the Cy Young Award both years. Wow. So that's 2019 and 2022.
Let's just look at this just in sort of simple numbers from when he gets traded from Detroit halfway through the 2017 season, more than halfway through the 2017 season, right at the deadline. The last couple of years before that on Detroit, he'd been pitching to a high, mid three ERA, not bad, but Detroit was starting to, lose that run they had in the early part of the, 05 to 12 or so. Comes to Houston, makes five starts, goes 5-0 with a 1.06 ERA, then goes on to win the World Series. 18, he's second in the Cy Young in 18. Wins the Cy Young in 19, then barely pitches in 20, doesn't pitch in 21, and wins the Cy Young in 2022. So the three full seasons he had, second in Cy Young, and then two Cy Youngs, and also came into them in 2017, was the MVP of the 2017, not the World Series, but the ALCS. He pitched in 17, he pitched to a 0 ERA in the World Series, 0.56 in the ALCS this year in the ALCS. God, he killed the Yankees. I'm looking at these. I'm like, oh, he had two great ALCSs. Yeah, they're both against the Yankees. So I have to give it to Verlander. Who would be second, Nolan Ryan?
I actually had Roy Oswalt because had some good years for those 90s Bagwell Biggio teams, but I don't think you can go wrong with Nolan Ryan as your potential second either. Just another quick note on Verlander. First of all, even in his mid 30s, when he has been healthy, he's been very, very consistent. He led the league with 34 starts in both 2018 and 2019. So that basically means that he was, which guys don't tend to do this, he was pitching every fifth day. He didn't miss a start. And then even this year, he made 28 starts, so he missed some starts. But then a 1.75 ERA at 39 years of age is pretty damn good for him in this most recent season. And like you said, another world championship. I think I know exactly what you want to talk about, whether we can get away with something, but why don't you have at it?
I can't go with Biggio as the catcher. he did not catch after 1991, if I'm reading this correctly. I looked at the positional numbers. Catcher is also not one that I feel comfortable sliding a guy in, because at one point he was a catcher. If you, you know what I mean? It's not like, well, he played second and then he played third. I feel a little weird about calling a guy a catcher who caught very early in his career and by 1992 was not a catcher anymore. Let me actually do the games by position.
So I agree that we can't make Biggio the catcher, but I want to sort of throw something else out there. After the Giants won the World Series in 2002, or lost the World Series, I should say, to Anaheim, who we'll talk about in a minute, Jeff Kent, despite having won an MVP with the Giants, he and Barry Bonds could not stand each other. So Bonds leaves the Giants. He signs with the Astros to play second base. And in
this
2000,
is what you mean, Kent?
I'm sorry, Kent leaves the Astros. Kent leaves
that would have been a story.
Yes, it would have been. Kent leaves the Astros to go and Kent leaves the Giants to go sign with the Astros to play second base. Now Jeff Biggio's at second base. Craig Biggio's at second base. 2003 and 2004, at age 37 and 38, Biggio plays 150 and 149 games in the outfield. And I think that those 2 years are enough to say that Craig Biggio can be an outfielder, especially when you factor in that you have an MVP in Altuve at second base. So I would replace Berkman with Craig Biggio and leave Altuve at second base. And that would be how I would go forward were I choosing this Astros team.
That's more fair. Did you have everything else the same?
I did. I had Cruz and Cedeno as my other two outfielders. And
so Cruz, Cedeno, and Biggio as your outfielders.
Correct.
Bregman at third?
Yeah, I have the whole left side, second, short, third is all the modern guys. Bregman, Biggio, Correa, although Correa has been gone now. But, the guys who you would associate with this current era.
And then did you have Ausmus as the catcher?
I did, because catcher's been sort of the weakest point for this team over the last 5 or 6 years, and I didn't know of anybody. I looked very briefly at whichever Ashby was a catcher and was with the team in the 80s. I think it was Alan Ashby was the one who was the catcher. It was either Alan or Andy. But I went with Ausmus. So, yeah, I had Ausmus.
I know Ashby's on the team in RBI. All right, so we were actually closer on that than we thought. Yeah, I can give you Biggio in the outfield. I couldn't give him to you as a catcher.
I agree. So Ausmus, Bagwell, Altuve, Bregman, Correa, Biggio, Cruz, Cedeno, and Verlander.
All right, so you got the A's and the Angels left. It's your pick. I am fine if you want to go the A's here, however you want to handle it.
Let's go with the A's because that way we're not closing with the best team. And here's what I had. I had a catcher. I had Mickey Cochran. First base was Jimmy Fox. Second base, Eddie Collins. Third base was Frank Home Run Baker. Shortstop, I moved up to Oakland and into the 70s, and I went with Burt Campaneris. Outfield, I had Al Simmons. I had Ricky Henderson. And I had Reggie Jackson. And then my pitcher was Lefty Grove. And that to me is a really, really, really good team.
So you had in your outfield, you had Al Simmons, Ricky Henderson, and Reggie Jackson.
Correct.
Okay. So we're close. I had third. I had Sal Bando. But I wrote over Baker in parentheses, so I could certainly.
I did the same thing. I crossed out Bando when I put Baker. Sal Bando was a big part of those 70s teams. He was an all-star. He just passed away this year, so we'll talk about him on our In Memoriam at the end of this year. Let me take a look here, because I don't want to take anything away from Sal Bando. He played He finished up his career with the Brewers. He started with the A's when they were still in Kansas City. He, you know, never put up great numbers, 240 career home runs. So he was consistently in double digit home runs, four-time All-Star. He was an All-Star for all three A's teams that won the World Series, 72, 73, and 74. Lifetime 254 hitter, and played with the A's essentially from 67 was the first year he got in more than a handful of games, all the way up to 1976, which I'm sure he was part of Charlie Finley's fire sale, and he ended up finishing his career with Milwaukee. Home Run Baker was part of this $100,000 infield for Connie Mack's A's. He actually wasn't with them. It's funny because, like Bando, Home Run Baker got caught up in an A's sell-off 60 years earlier by Connie Mack when he had to sell off his team in the mid-19-teens. And so he ended up playing most of the rest of his career with the Yankees starting in 1916, and he was there all the way up through the early years of Babe Ruth. Led the league in home runs 3 years in a row, sort of in the heyday of the A's with the team in the teens, 11 home runs, 10 home runs, actually 4 years in a row, 11, 10, 12, and 19. Also led the league in RBIs 2 years in a row, won the three World Series, same as Bando. I think that because Baker was one of the best players in baseball in the 19-teens, and you couldn't really say that about Sal Bando for the A's of the 70s. That was what pushed it over the top for me for Home Run Baker.
And Al Simmons obviously gets a spot, right? He was one of the best players on those 20s teams.
Yes, you know, 20s and early 30s.
All right. I'm not going to fully make this argument, but you can make a very strong argument that Mark McGwire belongs in over Reggie Jackson. McGwire has Jackson in almost every category that's a counting category. He has over 100 more home runs than him. He's the all-time franchise leader in home runs. He's got over almost 200 more RBIs than McGwire does. He has, let's see, OPS.
McGwire has more than Jackson, you're saying?
Yeah, McGwire's beating Jackson in all these things I'm mentioning. I'm sorry. Now, obviously, Jackson was on teams that won a lot more, so that counts. Although McGwire was on teams that he wasn't just on horrible teams. They went to a few World Series. On base percentage is, well, neither of them are there in on base percentage. I still would go with Jackson, but I just wanted to mention that McGwire's a little closer to Reggie than you would think when you factor in both of their tenures as A's.
Yeah, but how would you make that work anyway? Because Mark McGwire's not an outfielder.
I would figure that part out. I would put him in left field because I don't think he needs to play too much in the outfield. I did this very late at night, and I think I'm with him as an outfielder. So we're just going to get that part out.
And as you're saying this, I'm like, maybe was Jimmy Fox an outfielder and you could put him in the outfielder? But then I looked up Jimmy Fox's stats, and Jimmy Fox didn't really play the outfield. So, yeah.
You know what I was thinking? All those guys are outfielders, and Canseco was an outfielder. So I think I just got confused in my head. So, we can leave it in and I can look like an idiot or whatever. It's fine. Yes, that makes the outfield situation a lot easier. That Mark McGwire is not actually an outfielder. I don't know where I was coming from on that, but
and I thought I was bad originally forgetting about Verlander and putting in Roy Oswalt. So
you try to make like a brilliant point and then you just, you know.
Your point about Mark McGwire over Reggie Jackson was a pretty good one, I have to admit, but just doesn't really
work
because
he's not. Yeah.
And I don't think you could argue for McGwire over Jimmy Fox.
No. I just maybe that's why, because I was looking and I'm like, wow, Reggie's not in as high up in as many of these categories as I thought. And then just looking at the offense, I'm like, oh, can I put McGuire? And then I just was totally spacing on the fact that he was not actually an outfielder. And I know that I just spaced on. So yes.
And just as an aside here, even though he gets talked about mostly in the context of the Yankees, and we obviously come up with that mostly because we're in New York and we hear about him. Plus, you know, both his biggest and his most controversial moments, Reggie Jackson, were as a member of the Yankees. Playing wise, his best years probably were with Oakland. That's where he won his MVP. So just to kind of throw that out there. So I think with that adjustment, I think we're in agreement with Cocker and Fox, Collins, Baker, Campanaris, Simmons, Henderson, Jackson, and Grove. We've not had a team yet with 9 Hall of Famers, I don't think, either this episode or the previous, but that's a team with 8 Hall of Famers. And also, I don't think there's a single borderline Hall of Famer on that whole team. So that is a really, really good team.
Now, and the last thing I wanted to mention from a pitcher standpoint, Lefty Grove, Eddie Plank had really good numbers, but if you compare the eras Eddie Plank pitched in the dead ball era and Grove pitched in the more hitter friendly era, so they were close number wise, but I think when you adjust all that, I think you definitely get Grove.
Yeah, Chief Eddie Plank and Chief Bender are the two from that earlier A's dynasty that people talk about. But I do think you got to give it to Grove. They said he was so fast he could throw a lamb chop past a wolf.
Who said that?
I don't know. It was from the Ken Burns. So
yes. All right. So I think, by the way, that one will probably win when we rank these teams. That leaves us just with the Angels.
Correct.
So here's what I got. And this one we might have some wild differences on just because there's not a whole lot here. Although, actually, I mean, there's more here, but mostly in the out. So I have Bob Boone, the catcher, Rod Carew at first, Bobby Gritch at second, Jim Fregosi at short, Troy Gloss at third, my outfield, Vladimir Guerrero, and then the Fish brothers, Mike Trout and Tim Salmon. And then I went with Nolan Ryan as the pitcher over Chuck Finley, but it was close.
So I'm with you on 7 of the 9. We are in complete agreement in the infield. I had Carew, I had Gritch, I had Troy Glaus, who was the MVP of their only World Series win in 2002, and I had Jim Fregosi. Outfield, I had Trout. I had Salmon. Obviously, I had Trout, and Tim Salmon was you know, one of the best players never to make an All-Star team, by the way, if you're looking for a little bit of trivia there. And I did have Nolan Ryan as the pitcher. Who did you had Vlad as an outfielder?
I did, yeah. You have Jim Edmonds?
I had Darren Erstad.
Okay.
Vlad only played 6 years with the
Angels.
With the Angels, I should say. He had 27 to 39 home runs in all of them. He did win the AL MVP in his first year with the team in 2004 after he finally became a free agent and was able to leave Montreal. But there's really sort of a real drop off for him with the Angels after that. So 04, he leads the league in runs scored with 124. He hits 39 home runs, which is a good number even in a power heavy era, 126. But then he really does sort of start to drop off. I mean, he's still in the 30s in home runs for the next couple years. He finishes third in MVP the following year. So not bad by any means, you know, good, but I compared that with Erstad, who had almost twice as many seasons with 11 seasons. He won gold gloves at 3 different positions, first base, center field, and left field. Hit 355 in 2000. Obviously, I know that Vlad played more seasons, but, you know, he had 114 home runs to Vlad's 173. You know, let me look. I know that defense was definitely part of my consideration for Erstad.
Yeah, but Guerrero was a phenomenal outfielder too, especially with his arm.
True.
Maybe he wasn't.
How many gold gloves, though, did he win in Anaheim? He didn't win any gold gloves ever.
He wasn't a phenomenal fielder. He had a really strong arm. I'm not buying the drop off as much as you are indicating, to be honest. His average dropped 20 points the next year, but within the 2 years after that, it was within 10 of that first year. His on-base percentage actually went up from by 07, his on-base percentage was actually up to the highest it had been while he was an Angel. And these are all very similar numbers. So his OPS, his MVP year was 157. The next year it was 154. The year after that, 138, then 147. I just am not seeing the significant drop off. He was top 10 in MVP voting 4 years in a row, including 2 third-place finishes. I just don't think the drop off was as significant as you seem to. Obviously, eventually in like 09, he wasn't great. But I know he wasn't there super long, but he was the best player on those teams. And I think at that point, 04 to 09, he was one of the handful of most feared hitters in baseball.
Yeah, you know, the more I look at it, I can get there. So I can give you Vlad. I can definitely get there. The other one where I had a little bit of a disagreement was at catcher. And you went with Bob Boone, who was with the Angels for 7 years, and he won 4 gold gloves. Light hitter, he only hit 245. Defense was sort of his strong suit. He was on that 86 team that lost to the Red Sox in that heartbreaking 7-game ALCS before the Red Sox went on to have their own heartbreaking 7-game loss to the Mets in the World Series. I had actually gone with Brian Downing, who was mostly a left fielder, but was also a catcher for them. And he was with the Angels for basically the entirety of the 1980s, mostly an outfielder and DH, played with the Angels for 13 seasons. He was a guy who could kind of go anywhere. He could lead off. He could play catcher. He could, you know, bat cleanup. He could do any number of things. So I had gone with Brian Downing, but I don't know that I necessarily feel strongly enough about it that I, especially because he really was only a regular catcher for 2 seasons with the Angels. He was more of a catcher during his earlier years with Chicago. So I can give you Boone. I can definitely.
And I had written in parentheses defense. One additional thing I wanted to talk about. How many more years would we need to go for Ohtani to make this team? I guess first is an outfielder.
He's not going to make it over Trout. Let me look at his numbers real quick. We're talking just about his offensive numbers.
Well, that's a tough thing. Cause like, okay, 21, he won an MVP, but that obviously also includes his pitching. Last year, he was second in MVP and fourth in Cy Young. So, I mean, it's very hard to quantify because nobody's done this in well over. There was no year of Babe. You know what I mean? Even Babe Ruth was a pitcher and then he was a hitter. I know there was a little overlap, but it's hard to quantify. But I mean, the guy's already won an MVP, a rookie of the year, almost won another MVP.
His year last year is objectively a very, very, very good year. 46 homers, 100 RBIs, which I got to be honest, 100 RBIs is low for a guy with 46 home runs. I mean, some of that maybe is just how crappy his team is, but at putting guys on base, strikes out a ton. Yeah, everybody strikes out a ton these days. His batting average is low. You know, he's only got a 267 batting average. Even his OPS is not, you know, off the charts. Yeah, I mean, if we're just talking about his offense, I'd have to look at him versus Vlad a little bit more, but he'd probably have to put up at least 3 more years like the year that he just had to get considered, I would say.
And by the way, since you mentioned his home runs and lack of RBIs because of the team, that gives me an excuse to read the Tungsten Arm O'Doyle tweet, one of the most famous tweets of all time, from a guy named Matt Tomek on Twitter, May 17th, 2021. Said, every time I see an Angels highlight, it's like Mike Trout hit three home runs and raised his average to 528, while Shohei Ohtani did something that hasn't been done since Tungsten Arm O'Doyle of the 1921 Akron Groomsmen, as the Tigers defeated the Angels 8-3.
Yeah, three home runs for Trout, right? Yeah.
That's a very famous tweet. Now you'll see people actually with Angels O'Doyle jerseys and Akron jerseys, but yeah, so Ohtani not there yet, but probably will be soon. It's just so hard to quantify.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say he probably will be. I'd say he has a chance, but I take your point. Yeah. Before we go on to our list, I just should mention, I mentioned this in the last episode, Tom Stone's now taking the field, baseball's all-time dream teams for all 30 franchises. A lot of the comparisons and analysis that I'm coming out with, I'm taking from that book. So I want to give Mr. Tom Stone adequate credit for his book, and I'll link to it in the show notes. So like we did last time, we want to list our top five. Did you have anything to say before we moved on to that?
Here's what I'm going to say. Just because I feel like this one's, I mean, the A's have to be number one, right?
Unquestionably.
So just, we normally, I would never suggest this because it is anticlimactic, but let's do it the reverse way for this one. Let's say the A's are number one. Okay. They're going to move on. They move in with the Cardinals to our final round of six. Who's the second best on this list?
I think the second best is Seattle, because you have
A-Rod, Griffey, Ichiro.
Here's what I'm going to say. You have three Hall of Famers whose best years by far were with the Mariners. Edgar Martinez obviously played his whole career there. Griffey was a shell of himself by the time he got to Cincinnati, but he was an absolute phenom and I think a two-time MVP in Seattle. I know he won at least one. He might have been a two-time MVP in Seattle. And Ichiro, all his good years were in Seattle. So that's three. And then A-Rod obviously played a lot longer with the Yankees than he did for either of the other teams, never won an MVP in Seattle. But A-Rod had some really, really good years in Seattle. He wouldn't have gotten that $252 million contract if he didn't. And then, you know, you look at, you know, some of the others, and Randy Johnson, again, best years were in Arizona. So I think you got to go with Seattle as number two.
I would agree with that. Where do we go with number three? Is it the, I mean, the Astros has got a few. Is the three the Rangers? Palmeiro, Rodriguez, Juan Gonzalez, Josh Hamilton. Or is three, I mean, you got a lot of guys who were part of championship teams or Hall of Famers with the Astros.
I will go Houston here. Bagwell and Biggio both played. I mean, Biggio, I don't think played as one of those guys didn't play their whole career. I think did Bagwell come up with the Red Sox and played like a few games with them or something like that? Let me look that up real quick. But both of those guys played the vast majority of their career. They were essentially lifers with the Astros. No, Bagwell, I think, came up. Yeah, he came up in the Red Sox system, but his whole career on the field, actually in the majors, was with Houston. And then Biggio, same thing. So they both were, I thought one of them started somewhere else, but both entire careers with the Astros. Altuve has been an MVP. The other guys, you know, Correa, Bregman, not as good, but solid contributors to at least one, in the case of Bregman, two world championship teams. We talked about Verlander. Verlander is the best pitcher for his team other than Lefty Grove. I think he outdoes Randy Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
He outdoes Nolan Ryan, and he certainly outdoes Kenny Rogers. So I would go with the Astros at three.
And then would you have Texas at four?
I would have Texas at four. This Angel team is pretty, pretty bad, to be totally honest.
The infield stinks.
The infield stinks.
For what we're talking about.
Well, Carew's a Hall of Famer, but Carew's mostly a Hall of Famer based on what he did with the Twins. Mm. And the, you know, Trout is who he is, obviously. We talked about how Vlad's best years were probably in Montreal. Nolan Ryan's best years, I don't know. I mean, Nolan Ryan, the career of Nolan Ryan is its own whole conversation. So meanwhile, in Texas, you got MVPs. Trout's been MVP, obviously, but you got MVPs with A-Rod, with Juan Gonzalez, with Hamilton. That's five MVP awards right there. Did Pudge ever win an MVP? I don't think he did, but he's also probably one of the best, what do you want to call him, five catchers, 13-time Gold Glove winner. Now, some of this obviously happened with
he was the MVP, by the way. He was the MVP in 1999.
Okay, so you got basically, you got the 96, 98, and 99 MVPs on this team, plus Hamilton, who won an MVP. Beltre's going to the Hall of Fame, not based entirely on his career with the Rangers, but partly. Palmeiro, again, steroids, but a guy who, if, had he not been caught doing steroids, would have been considered a borderline Hall of Famer. You can look at five or six of these guys on the Rangers and at least talk about a dominant couple of years they had. You know, Frank Howard leading the American League in the 60s in home runs, 60s and early 70s. You don't have anything like that on the Rangers, so I don't even know that I would consider it to be particularly close, Rangers over the Angels.
Yeah, I mean, this Angels, yeah, the sort of front, the infield is not great. So I would agree with them being fifth. So, you know, already in my head, I'm kind of playing through other divisions, who will be the number one in each of those divisions. I don't know right off the top of my head. I can strike some teams out. I guess I got a feeling, a pretty good feeling about two of the divisions who will be the winners in those ones. But I don't know. So
the AL Central is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got, again, four. I wrote it down. Both Centrals have four original 16 teams. So that's a lot to draw from. The AL East has three, but one of them's the Orioles with the St. Louis Browns, who aren't going to bring much to the table. The division we just did, the AL West, only has one. And then in the NL, you have four in the Central in the division we just did, two in the West, and two heavyweights in the West, and then two in the East. So
the NL West is going to be a really interesting one to do, because you're going to have three that we kind of tick through with some mediocrity pretty quickly, and then you're going to have, yeah, the Giants and the Dodgers, which is going to be a lot of fun. Since we're here, do you want to decide what we're going to do next? What maybe we should do the NL East next.
All right, so if we do the NL East and the AL Central, that would leave us with the AL East and the NL West.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
We'll do one episode at a time. I'm just thinking about recording. NL East next, yeah, because that'll give you the Marlins. That'll give you the Expos / Nationals. It'll give you the Phillies / Blue Jays / Phillies. The Phillies were known as the Blue Jays, although nobody called them that for about 2 years in the 40s. I think it was the 30s or 40s.
I think that was when Casey Stengel was the manager, actually.
And then the Metropolitans and the Braves. It was funny when I was trying to do that math on teams in each division. I kept getting 17, and I'm like, what am I doing wrong? And then I'm like, oh, I'm counting the Mets as an original team, and they're not. I guess you just kind of, I guess, associate them with being an original team. But yeah, no, those will be fun ones. So yeah, we'll like you said, we'll sprinkle those in. You know, baseball season is 6 months long. We got six divisions to do, regular season 6 months long. So, you know, we'll probably sprinkle these in as we go.
And I was wrong. Casey Stengel never managed the Phillies. He played for the Phillies. He managed the Dodgers and Braves before he got to the Mets.
Okay.
Well, lots of fun. And we're only a third of the way through here. And this, like Andrew said, this will be something that kind of builds, you know, that we sprinkle in with from time to time over the next several months. So hope you enjoyed the first two. You'll hear more from us, not only on this topic, but on some other topics throughout the next several months. But until we speak again, I am Dan Newman.
And I'm Andrew Newman. Goodbye, old sports.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Join George Bozica, the president of the PFRA, and myself, John Bozica, each month for the Professional Football Researchers Association official podcast. We'll discuss the history of the game, the many names of the game, and so many different things for you, making the history of football not only entertaining, but fun at the same time, as we join you on the Sports History Network on the official PFRA podcast.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.